Okay. I'll call the meeting to order. And our plan is today is that we're not doing any votes today. This is kind of a rollout of the bill as we see it, the rollout of the spreadsheet and the changes in the bill. There'll also be an author's amendment tomorrow of something, you know, mainly technical or mainly things that were left out. We'll try and indicate them when they come along. There will be several things which are coming as specifically as amendments to the bill. One of them is something from the Secretary of State's office, some complication of communities. You'll see it when it comes. I think it's non-controversial, but since we hadn't had it before, I decided to do it as a separate amendment. I did one other thing. One other thing will come up as a separate amendment tomorrow, that instead of putting it into the full form of the bill, I decided I would offer the domestic partner benefits for state employees as a separate amendment. So that will be. So I will be offering that, and people will vote as they please. And so let's start by Ms. Roberts will go over the financial aspects of the bill, the spreadsheet and the changes in the spreadsheet according to the general direction.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to be working off the detailed spreadsheet that was in your packet. Just to note, the first two pages are a summary of the general fund spending only within the bill at the agency and program level. And you can see on the second page of the summary spreadsheet that the total spending within the total net general fund spending within the chair's recommendation is $617,621,000. This is slightly below our target of $617,969,000. Then moving on to the next page, which is marked detail in the top right corner. I'll start walking through those.
Okay, guys, we gave you our rulers so you can follow things easily.
I do also have a chain item spreadsheet
that which is not to be used as a weapon. And the other thing is, you know, I think instead of waiting until we're finished, I think if people have questions, they should, you know, ask to be recognized as we go along.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, beginning on page one of the detailed spreadsheet, starting with the Senate, the House Chair's recommendations, and the column I'm going to be working off is the House Chair's recommendation column, which is really right in the center of the spreadsheet. This represents the fiscal year 10 and 11 recommendations. The columns to the right are the tails that go along with the various recommendations. So again, beginning with the Senate, there is an operating budget reduction of 5% for the Senate. This brings their total recommended spending to $43.6 million. Moving on to the House, there is a $1.85 million operating reduction. This is a 3% reduction as approved by the House Rules Committee, bringing the House's total recommended spending to $59.88 million. Moving on to the LCC, for the first three offices, I have broken out the 3% reduction for the LCC. This is for the Legislative Auditor, the Legislative Reference Library, and the Revisor's Office. And the reason I've broken those out separately is we have a tradition of breaking them out separately in the appropriations portion of the bill. So their 3% recommendation is shown on each line, $360,000 for the Legislative Auditor, an $86,000 reduction for the Reference Library, and a $350,000 reduction for the Revisor's. Moving on to the next page, for the additional remaining amount of the 3% reduction to the LCC, I did not break it out at the various program levels, but show it on line 74, and that is an additional $156,000 reduction to the LCC. In addition to these reductions, there's a recommendation for a small amount of one-time funding, $16,000 in fiscal year 2010, for the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy for various meeting expenses related to the federal stimulus oversight that commission has been meeting far more often than it has in past years, and so this was a request to cover some of those expenses. So to summarize for the legislature, in total, the recommended general fund spending is $134.3 million. We also track a small appropriation for the Healthcare Access Fund, which goes to the LCC and then covers various legislative staff expenses that support the Healthcare Access Commission. Moving on to the governor's office, beginning on line 103, there is, the chair includes the recommended operating reduction, I'm sorry, this is, should be 5%, same as the governor's recommendation. In addition, the chair's recommendation includes the cost of moving the expenses for both the legislative policy staff and the D.C. office expenses from interagency agreements directly to the governor's office. You may recall the governor's office testimony that a portion of their legislative policy staff expenses and all of the D.C. office expenses are charged out to other agencies, so it would move those expenses directly to the governor's office.
And Madam Chair, if I might, just in general terms, does this proposal meet the current target for this committee in general, and then related to this line item, how is that spending going to be accommodated related to the targets for the other spending areas?
As originally we had some language that would reduce, that would make sure that the targets from the other agencies that were moved over were reduced. One of the problems we ran into was that a couple of the divisions had already reduced it. So if we reduced it again here, which was a somewhat dubious thing to do because we're doing things in other divisions, we ran the risk of double counting it because of ones that had already reduced it. So we just, because of various things that we do in the course of the bill, we were below our target spending anyway. We just appropriated it. But we did contemplate, and as I keep reminding people, this isn't, the version that this bill is not one that we're going to have to defend before the Supreme Court next year. It's got a lot of steps to go in the way we're going to do it. So it seemed to me that that was a complication that was better dealt with at a higher level, since we could meet our targets without having to take it to do it. So, but the original plan was to hold it harmless by reducing it from the other areas. And my guess is in the end that that's what will happen. It's hard to quite figure out how to do it in this bill at this point.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, I'm going to move on to the State Auditor's Office on page 3 of the spreadsheet. Again, working off of the middle column, health care rec, the total recommended spending for the State Auditor is $19 million. This includes one-time funding for 5 additional auditors related to the federal oversight duties. That's a total of $680,000. The recommendation does not include the governor's budget reduction or the increased funding that the auditor requested for investigative oversight and staff retention. And I should note that this funding for the additional audit staff is fully recoverable, and so at the end of the spreadsheet, you're going to see an offsetting revenue for that. So it's really a net zero for this committee's target. Moving on to the Attorney General, on page 4, you can see the totals for the Attorney General. The general fund recommendation is for a total of $46.8 million for the biennium. This includes the governor's recommended 5% reduction of $2.4 million, but then the chair also recommended some additional funding put back in for two bills that are rolled into the omnibus delete everything amendment, House Bill 8, which was Representative Simon's bill, and House Bill 7, which was Representative Winkler's bill. Moving on to the Secretary of State, The total recommended amount from the general fund for 10-11 is $11.8 million. Beginning on line 2003, you can see the change items. I'm going to note that the first two, the international student fees, change to non-dedicated receipts, and the redistribution of the base between fiscal years, I think are really technical changes that I've discussed with both the Senate fiscal staff and the Department of Finance staff and the Secretary of State staff, and it's something that we spend many hours chasing $6,000 every year, and we decided to we wanted to get rid of those issues. So, and then the recommendation also includes the governor's operating budget reduction recommendation of 5%, or $622,000. And then finally, on line 214, you'll see that House File 1463, which was Representative Davies' bill, extending a temporary surcharge, has been included in the bill, and so I'm tracking special revenue funds of expenditures of $1.95 million. Moving on to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The direct general fund recommendation for the board is $1.396 million, which includes the governor's recommended reduction of $74,000 for the biennium. But the bill language also includes Representative Kahn's bill, which would redirect $50,000 each year from the public subsidy statutory appropriation to the offices, to the Campaign Finance Board office. So, in fact, they also would be receiving an additional $50,000 to net out against the reduction. Moving on to page five, the Investment Board. There's no change from base recommended for the State Investment Board. Their general fund appropriation would be $302,000 for the biennium. For administrative hearings, the recommendation of the chair is the same as the governor, with a 5% reduction to the office's general fund appropriation. So their total general fund appropriation would be $550,000. They also receive a $14.5 million appropriation from the Workers' Compensation Special Payment Fund. Moving on to the Office of Enterprise Technology at the bottom of page 5. I'll note on line 272 that the governor's recommendation for the data center consolidation is not currently included in the bill. On line 279, the governor's recommendation for the continuation of the Minnesota Electronic Licensing System, which is a special revenue-funded project through license fees, or surcharges on license fees, is included in the bill. And then on the next page, on page 6, the chair's recommendations include the governor's reduction of $606,000 for the biennium to the enterprise planning and management function of the office. So the overall general fund appropriation recommended for OEP is $11.5 million. Moving on to the Department of Administration, I'll try to go through this line by line, but overall there is an overall operating reduction that the governor recommended to the Office of Administration. It's broken down on a detailed spreadsheet at the program level, so you'll see it several times. But the cumulative amount of that reduction, so the governor was $2.35 million, and the chair has a reduction of $1.24 million. And the difference there is the chair's recommendations do not include the reductions for the Environmental Quality Board. So I'm just going to sort of move past all the various operating reductions unless somebody has a question about those. And then moving on to page 7, line 344 at the very top. Or 345, the governor's recommendation for the in lieu of rent increase for plant management is included. The next change that is different from the various operating budget reductions is on line 357, the real property system. The governor had recommended $1.7 million from the general fund, and I believe we have language in the bill that allows the Department of Administration to work with other agencies to try and fund that through agency contributions. On line 368, the governor's recommendation for increase in SMART funding was not included in the chair's recommendations. And then the next difference, on line 394, the Office of Grants Management increase, the chair has included funding for the to continue the Office of Grants Management. That's $250,000 for the biennium. There's also language in the bill that requires the department to recover the cost of the office through a portion of the grant that the office oversees. So again, there will be an offsetting revenue for that item. And I'm sure that concludes the changes for the Department of Administration. On page 8, you can see on line 418, the total general fund recommendation is direct appropriations $37.9 million for the department. Moving on to the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board, the chair's recommendation is the same as the governor for $708,000 for the biennium. This includes a 5% operating reduction. Now, moving on to the Department of Finance. On the first program, Accounting Services, again, this is similar to Department of Administration. The governor had recommended certain operating reductions, and they're spread throughout the various budget activities. I'm not going to note each one. I think in every case, the chair's recommendations include those operating budget reductions. But on line 445, there's a recommendation for $500,000 for stimulus funds reporting and oversight. This is in addition to some funding that has already passed through this committee. It was Representative Solberg's bill that made an appropriation in fiscal year 09. This is in addition to that amount. And sorry, I don't remember off the top of my head exactly how much that was. On line 446,000, you'll see that the chair's recommendations include the additional funding for financial oversight and assistance, the internal controls issue. And moving into lines 450 and 451, the chair's recommendation includes the governor's request for funding the MAPS upgrade through lease purchase financing. And finally, let's see, moving on to page 9. The next change. The chair's recommendation did not include the other portion of financial oversight and assistance that was related to the bonding office. And then, again, picks up the remaining portions of the governor's recommended operating budget reductions for the department. So the total general fund direct appropriation amount would be $40.56 million. You can see that on line 507. And then underneath, under open and statutory appropriations, I'm tracking the cost for the MAPS replacement and other non-operating changes that we typically track for Department of Finance. Department of Revenue, I'm not going to have 2 pages of detailed tracking. I'll try not to go through that line by line unless you have questions. I think the important changes, again, in the chair's recommendation is that her recommendations include picking up all of the governor's operating budget reduction, which you may recall was applied only to the non-compliance portion of the department's budget. And that, again, will show up under several of the activities. The big change item for the department is on page 11, lines 583 to 584, the chair has recommended funding the completion of the integrated tax system through the lease purchase option. And then the chair has, in addition to the governor's recommendation, included a new compliance initiative of that you'll see in the you've broken into two levels, but the net of this compliance initiative, you'll see the appropriations under Department of Revenue, and then again a revenue at the bottom of the spreadsheet is a net of $22 million for 10 and 11 for the general fund. And those are the changes within the Department of Revenue.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Madam Chair? Ms. Robbins, could you repeat that? Where does the $22 million?
That's the net amount of netting out the increased expenditures that are showing on line 599 and also on line 614. And then the projected revenues are at the, I'll show you at the end of the spreadsheet, okay. But the net would be $22 million. Moving on to Department of Military Affairs, the House CARES Act are for the base level funding for the Department of Military Affairs. That includes for the three programs, maintenance and training facilities, general support, and enlistment incentives. So the total recommended funding from the general fund is $38.7 million. For the Lawful Gambling Control Board, I'm now on page 13. The chair includes the governor's recommendation of $5.88 million. This is an appropriation from the Special Revenue Fund. And likewise, the Minnesota Racing Commission is also funded out of the Special Revenue Fund, and the chair's recommendations are the same as the governor's, $1.798 million for the biennium. Under the contingent account, on line 719, the chair has included the governor's recommendation for $5 million in one-time funding for a contingency amount set aside for potential match needs for any federal stimulus money. Under tort claims, again, the chair's recommendation is the same as the governor's, $322,000 from the general fund. The Minnesota State Retirement System, these are the appropriations for legislators that are under, not the current plan, but the former legislator's plan. So it's a sort of a pay-as-you-go system. And then the Constitutional Officer's Retirement, the recommended funding is $4.75 million, which is the same as forecast. And then at the bottom of page 13, you'll see the $18 million biennial appropriation for the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund, which is a closed fund. On page 14,
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Sure, of course, yeah. Right. I said I preferred that instead of saving them up. So.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard thing. On some of these retirement systems, as I read through them, there's some significant amounts. How many years is this going on as far as these kinds of payments being made? Is this a one-time or is this year upon year for how long?
The MRF fund is a continued one until the fund is closed, until it's finished. And, of course, one of the problems we have is that because of the downturn on investment, there isn't enough money in the fund now. So there was a proposal to merge it into PERA. But someone, PERA, has just recently, said that they don't want that to happen until it's clear that it will not have any adverse effect on current PERA members. So that's been left hanging. That's been left hanging this year, and obviously it needs an additional contribution either from the state or from Minneapolis to help make that whole. I will point out it's not MRF members live all over the state. The retirees, and it's a closed fund, and it is a problem with the reason that the state got into this was that part of the problem that the fund has was because of state laws that didn't adequately cover the retirement fund. So.
Madam Chair, about how long do you think it will take for that? Was there kind of a plan laid out as to when this would be, the transition would be completed?
I think it depends on when the last MRF member died. But I don't know.
Maybe that's
I don't
long.
Know. Yeah. I'm sorry, is there anyone here? I'm sorry, we'll get that information. But I do know at one point, because the investments were going well, at one point, Senator Marion, that there was a larger amount than this amount, and Senator Marion cut it back because of the projections were that the extra money wouldn't be needed because it was almost 90% funded. Sorry, when I say these numbers from the top of my head, not necessarily correct, but it was, let's say, very well funded, and now, of course, things have been a problem. But this was in agreement with the closed, you know, the closed MRF fund.
Thank you. Okay. Madam Chair, continuing on page 14 of the spreadsheet, at the very top of the spreadsheet, this tracks the first class teacher state aid. And you'll note that the Chair's recommendation does not include the fiscal year 2011 appropriations for these programs. There's language in the bill requiring that this payment be made at a later date after the end of fiscal year 2013. That concludes the change items. I'll just briefly go through sort of the reconciliation at the bottom. On line 779, you'll see the line for the direct general fund appropriations contained in the bill. That's an amount of $648.94 million. There are also, we track open general fund appropriations of $9.2 million for the biennium. And then beginning on line 817, I'll go through the various general fund revenue changes. First on line 818, $133,000 from House File 1463. Again, this was represent Daphne's bill, and this represents the general fund portion of that bill. On line 819, you'll see the offset that I mentioned earlier for the state auditors, audit staff, or federal oversight. On line 820, this again is related to that technical change I discussed earlier about changing the international student fees to non-dedicated receipts with a $6,000 revenue. On line 821 is the Chair's recommendation to recover the cost of the Office of Grants Management through an offset to the grants overseen by that office. And there's language in the bill related to that. And on line 822, you'll see the additional tax compliance revenues, a total of $30 million for fiscal year 10-11. And since I carry those through into the tails, the additional revenues for 12 and 13 would be $40.56 million. On line 823, there's language in the bill authorizing slot machines at the airport, and the revenue tracked for that item is $7.37 million for 10 and 11. And then the next two items are a tracking issue related to state land sale. Some members may be familiar with this issue. It's something we've carried in the state government finance bill. And this is actually an extension from, I believe, the 2007 session, where this committee put forth a goal for Department of Administration and state agencies to sell state land. And at this point, the state agencies haven't been able to meet that goal. The Department of Natural Resources, I think, has stepped up and said they'll try to meet half of the remaining amount, which is $4 million. So what this bill does is move that goal forward into the 2010-2011 session, similar to what we did 2 years ago. And that means we're tracking a cost in fiscal year 09 because we had been anticipating those revenues coming in by the end of this biennium. But then the savings from the projected sale of additional state lands is moved forward into 10-11. That's that $2 million that you see there. And then finally, moving on to the non-general fund revenues, line 829, you'll see the special revenue portion of House File 1463 for the Secretary of State. On line 830, the electronic licensing fee surcharge, and I think I need to double check these numbers. They may not be updated for the revised governor's recommendation. On line 831, there's some language related to cooperative purchasing expansion included in the bill. It's not identical to the governor's recommendation, but there are some internal service fund revenues that are anticipated from that change. On line 832, a small license fee ratification for the Racing Commission, that's $8,000. And then, not going forward into the totals on this column, but you'll see the on 833 and 834, the lease purchase financing that was flowing into a new fund for both the master placement and integrated tax system. And so finally, for the reconciliation, and I apologize, this carries over onto two pages, so it's kind of difficult, but on line 839, the direct appropriations again are $648.94 million from the general fund. In addition, we track open appropriations of $9.2 million. So the total general fund spending in the chair's recommendations is $658 million. This is offset by new general fund revenues of $40.5 million, bringing the net general fund spending to $617.6 million for the biennium.
Any questions
about the numbers?
Madam Chair, Ms. Roberts, just a mechanical question on line 793, the open appropriation. I'm curious how these are total numbers, not change numbers. So I'm curious how we are $22 million above the base. Both the governor's recs and ours are $22 million above the base. Am I missing something about how open appropriation works? Were we counting on a $13 million negative open appropriation? Or?
Madam Chair and Representative Taylor, I'm trying to think this through. This represents a net of several changes throughout the bill. I believe the reason that the House and the governor are both showing, yes, it's because of the MAPS and the integrated tax system, statutory open statutory appropriations that are included in the bill. So that's why the numbers for both the governor and the House are above the base for those, for that amount. And then there are several other line items that we track. Probably the largest is the indirect cost receipts, which also is under the Department of Finance and actually shows up as a negative on the spreadsheet because it's a revenue to the general fund. It's the line item we track for indirect costs where the general fund is being reimbursed for administrative expenses that should be covered by other funds. So other funds pay the general fund back to cover the sort of general overhead expenses. And I could give you I can give you a breakdown of what this line item is. It's just it's made up of several different things.
Madam Chair, Ms. Roberts, I think that the answer to my next question may mean you don't have to do that work. It's just I think for an understanding for those of us who haven't been on this committee before, that indirect negative aggregate must be a pretty significant number then in the eight digits. You know, about 10 million.
No, Madam Chair, in Representative Taylor, it's actually bigger than that. Let me find it real quickly. It's on line, on page 9, line 511. It's a negative, shows up as a negative $31 million for the biennium. But that's actually a receipt to the general fund. And you'll see right above that is the amount for the MAPS replacement. And then below that is finance non-operating, which is another amount we track in this committee, which is basically made up of appropriations and spending that doesn't really have a good home. So it ends up in the finance non-operating account.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Okay. Oh, also, let me tell, tomorrow we'll take brief testimony to the bill on any sections, and any amendments will be taken at tomorrow's meeting. So, I'm going to be pretty strict about not really taking testimony on the bill. So, because we did have, you know, presentations of most of the things that are in it and so forth. But obviously anyone who needs to answer questions from committee meetings who are here will, you know, will be appropriate. Okay. Now, Mr. Shepard, do you want to go through the statutory parts of the bill?
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to work from the bill itself, the doc, the delete everything amendment on the 8.5 by 11 paper that's labeled A09-0398, and I'll start on page 10. The first nine pages of the bill are all of the numbers that reflect the spreadsheet that Ms. Roberts just went through, and we actually need, you'll see that most of these numbers are currently zero because we didn't have them at the time we needed to produce this bill draft. So those will be filled in when you make your final decisions when the division report comes up. And some of these numbers may not match the spreadsheet right now either, but if you work from the spreadsheet, it's the spreadsheet that is the chair's recommendation. So on the language, the first item I'd call to your attention is on page 10, toward the top of the page, section 25, which requires the governor to reduce some managerial positions, and the amount of the savings will be filled in by amendment tomorrow. Article 2 starts the statutory language for state government operations. The first section relates to the title and work of the finance divisions in the House and the Senate. Section 2 is from a bill sponsored by Representative Downey and Winkler. This is the first of three sections that relates to the issue of internal controls in state government. And this Section 2 relates to the additional requirements for the legislative auditor. On page 11, toward the bottom, Section 3 is from Representative Winkler's House File 7, as is Section 4 on the top of page 12. And these are part of his initiative relating to misuse of state appropriations. On page 12 in the middle, Section 5 is the language that Representative Kahn mentioned earlier that forbids personnel costs attributable to the office of the governor from being accounted for in other agencies, and provides that, as Ms. Roberts pointed out on the spreadsheet, these would be accounted for through an additional appropriation to the office of the governor. Section 6 relates to the signature requirement for phone use. Under current law, each elected official has to sign the monthly long-distance telephone bill, and this section provides an exemption for a month in which your bill is less than $5, and then it goes on to provide, of course, that the person still needs to pay that amount if it's not for state business, and that all of the data will still be public. Section 7 and Section 8 on the bottom of page 12 and the top of page 13 are Representative Kalin's bill, House File 1018, relating to state websites and requiring contact information to be posted on the website. Section 9 on page 13 is something Ms. Roberts mentioned. This implements the new appropriation of $50,000 each year to the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Section 10 relates to the State Board of Investment. It requires their annual report to have an executive summary and requires that the board include all of its annual and quarterly reports, including the executive summaries, on its website. Section 11 is one of several sections that relates to a bill that Representative Pawlowski carried, House File 2146. This was a governor's initiative to transfer the Management Analysis Division from the Department of Administration to the Department of Finance. So this is one section that makes conforming changes. Section 12 requires that all parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol must be reserved for the public. The next pages.
It's a traditional appearance in the House. From various chairs, including Kahn, Crinkie, Rucavino, whatever. Long history. Okay.
Pages 15 through 21, sections 13 through 26, are Representative Simon's House File 8, the False Claims Act, which the committee heard earlier this year. And I don't believe anything has changed in that since the committee heard it. On page 21, section 27 provides that the Department of Finance may not be identified by a name other than the name assigned by law. Section 28 is a technical amendment relating to internal auditing. It's striking some language in current law because that language is provided in more detail later in the bill. Section 29 on page 22 relates to the transfer of the management analysis division to the Commissioner of Finance. Section 30 is from Representative Winkler's House File 20, a website with a searchable database on state expenditures, and that continues all the way over to the top of page 24. Section 31 on page 24 is from Representative Downey and Representative Winkler's bill on internal controls and internal auditing. This section assigns new duties to the Commissioner of Finance. Section 32 on the bottom of page 25 is also from an initiative of Representative Downey and Representative Winkler. This creates a financial controls council appointed by the Executive Council relating to internal controls and auditing in state government. This language is identical to the bill that the committee last week. That section 33 on the bottom of page 26 requires that a proposal in the governor's detailed budget documents for a new investment in information technology of over $100,000 must request that the money be appropriated to the Office of Enterprise Technology. This would apply to future budget proposals. Section 34 is related to the transfer of the Management Analysis Division to the Commissioner of Finance. Section 35 is taken from Section 1 of Representative Carlson's House File 1671, which the committee heard last week, and it allows payroll deduction for state employees to multiple exclusive representatives if an employee is a member of more than one union. Section 36 is from Representative Winkler's House File 7 relating to misappropriation of state funds. Section 37, also same bill, House File 7, this is on the top of page 28, requiring best practices for certain investigations. Section 38 is some language, I believe this is from the governor's original proposal, relating to lease purchase financing for the information technology projects that Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier. There is going to be a small technical amendment to this tomorrow that was requested by the Department of Finance to make this technically correct. And that continues over to Section 39 on page 31. This is the annual appropriation to support lease purchase agreement for the MAP system. Section 40 requires state entities to use standard letter size paper to print documents to the extent practical and to not print on legal size paper unless that is the only possible size for a particular document. Section 41 on page 31 is taken from Representative Paymar's bill, House File 1268, I believe, which allows state entities to use space under their control to offer fitness, wellness, or similar classes, and to allow persons conducting them to charge employees a fee to participate. Section 42 relates to that. It requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to amend one of its rules in conformity with the new statutory requirements. Section 43 on the top of page 32 is creating an enterprise real property account in the special revenue fund. Ms. Roberts mentioned this when she went over the spreadsheet. Sections 44 and 45, 44 authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to sell naming rights in state buildings or meeting rooms. And Section 45 authorizes the sale of advertising on barriers adjacent to state construction sites. Section 46 on the bottom of page 32 and over.
And no, we didn't attach any income to these yet. We thought we'd wait and see how it works. So it's not in the general fund balance. Okay.
On page 33, section 46 forbids the state from providing a car for use of the lieutenant governor. Section 47, beginning on the bottom of page 33 and continuing all the way over to the top of page 37, is the creation of the Geospatial Information Office, which was in Representative Kahn's House File 1981. On page 37, section 48 is from Representative Newton's House File 715, which is a 6% preference in state procurement to veterans, businesses owned by veterans with service-connected disabilities. Section 49 relates...
I just want to interrupt and point out that's also Representative Severson's bill, except Representative Severson's bill was for all veterans, and we decided to just use the points that were in common in the bills for the disabled veterans.
Okay. Madam Chair, Sections 49 and 50 relate to the same issue of Representative Severson and Newton's bill. Section 51 is the statewide electronic licensing system, which Ms. Roberts mentioned when she went over the spreadsheet. In that section is the temporary licensing surcharge on the bottom of page 38 and the top of page 39. Section 52 at the bottom of page 39 and continuing to the top of page 40 is a bill that Representative Rukavina had about state employee vacation donation with House File 691, I believe. The next sections were mistakenly included by staff in this bill and shouldn't be there. So, and that is all the way over to page 43. At the bottom of page 43 is a provision that applies to appointing authorities in state government. It has special provisions that apply when employees voluntarily take unpaid leaves of absence, and it extends something that has been in the law for a number of years and makes it permanent. Section 63 on page 44, the Management Analysis Revolving Fund is part of the transfer of duties in the transfer of the Management Analysis Division to the Department of Finance. Section 40 on page 45 and 46 related sections that were not intended to be in the bill. The bottom of page 46, section 67, requires the Metropolitan Council, in a consultation with the Environmental Quality Board, to consider certain property in the city of Minneapolis for inclusion in the regional recreational open space system. It requires a report and then does not allow rezoning or related activity until the legislature determines that the property is not suitable for inclusion in the system. Beginning on page 47, section 68 is from a bill that Representative Kahn sponsored. It relates to voter registration and requires post-secondary institutions to provide a list of current students to the Secretary of State. Section 69 is related to Representative Severson and Newton's bills on the service-disabled veteran-owned businesses, and this particular part relates to MnDOT contracts, and that continues all the way over to page 70, where the next several sections, section 70, 71, and all the way through 73 on page 53 are part of Representative Kahn's bill relating to voter registration. On the bottom, that takes us to the top of page 54, section 74, which is the appropriation that Ms. Roberts mentioned when she went over to the spreadsheet. This is the annual appropriation to the Commissioner of Revenue for lease purchase of the integrated tax system software package. And then on page 54, there's another section that is not intended to be in the bill. Page 55, section 77 is the section Ms. Roberts mentioned directing the director of the state lottery to operate slot machines at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. It provides that these slot machines would be available only to people who possess a valid ticket with specified departure or arrival times. Section 78 on the bottom of page 55 is a bill based on Representative Winkler's bill, and this relates to cooperative purchasing. It requires municipalities to contract for through the state's cooperative purchasing venture whenever practicable and cost-effective. Section 79 on the bottom of 55 and 56 is part of Representative Severson and Newton's bill. This relates to metropolitan agencies. Again, this is relating to the service-disabled, veteran-owned small businesses. Section 80 on page 57 implements the provision that Ms. Roberts spoke about, the delay of the sale and state land requirements to June 30th, 2011 instead of 2009. On the bottom of page 58, section 82 provides that during the upcoming biennium, executive branch agencies should consider using services provided by the government training services before contracting with other outside vendors for similar services. You can see from looking at that language that this is extending a requirement that applies during the current biennium. On the bottom of page 58, section 83 is Representative Winkler bill that specifies criteria that must be met for the system the Commissioner of Administration selects to provide electronic personal health records under a pilot project that was authorized in 2007 for participants in the State Employees Group Insurance Program. And that continues over to page 60 on section 84, which provides that during the upcoming biennium, the powers, duties, or staff associated with the Environmental Quality Board may not be transferred. Section 85 on page 60 is the provision Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier relating to direct aid on behalf of teacher pension funds, providing that in the second year of this biennium, these payments will not be made, but they will be appropriated effective July 1, 2013. Section 86 is a provision from a Representative Gardner bill, House File 625, that I believe the committee heard last week, that requires consultation with legislative officials for planning of the MAP system and requires the system to include an application programming interface that gives the public access to the system's underlying data on state contracts, appropriations, and expenditures using an open format. We did pick up a technical change here that Representative Holbrook had suggested earlier. It's on page 60, line 28, that refers not only to the Data Practices Act, but to other laws governing data practices, so that the system would have to be designed in compliance with all other laws, not just the Data Practices Act. Section 87 ratifies racing license fees that I believe were contained in the governor's budget recommendations. Section 88 is the authorization for the Commissioner of Management and Budget, or Finance, it probably should say in this bill, to enter into lease purchase agreements for the MAP system and the integrated tax system. Section 89 requires the Met Council to include mitigation of impacts in the capital area, which weren't addressed in the project baseline, in the preliminary engineering and final design for the Central Corridor Light Rail Line. And it requires reports to the chairs of the capital investment committees and finance committees on costs to mitigate the impacts that are not addressed in the project baseline. On the bottom of page 61, section 90, Ms. Roberts mentioned this earlier. This is the enterprise real property contribution, and it provides that the Commissioner of Administration must determine the amount to be contributed by each executive agency to maintain the system during the coming biennium and to enter into agreements with agencies setting forth manners in which the agencies are to make their contributions. Section 91 is a report from the Commissioner of Administration on savings in state agency costs for rental space in both state-owned and state-leased buildings that can be achieved by expected decreases in agency complement and that could be achieved by encouraging or requiring increased telecommuting by state employees. Section 92 implements the legislation relating to the Geospatial Information Office by transferring funds, assets, and employees of the Land Management Information Center to the new office. Section 93 is a revisor's instruction associated with that transfer. Section 94 has three repealers, 16C.046 is the current law mandating a website with a searchable database of state contracts. It's being repealed because it's being replaced by more specific provisions in this bill from Representative Winkler's House File 20. Section 645.44, Subdivision 19, is a definition of a fee and a tax in Minnesota statutes. And Section 4A.05 is the current law governing the Land Management Information Center. I won't go through all of Article 3 in detail, but in general, this article is Representative Dabney's House File 1463 that was presented to the committee last week by the Secretary of State's office. And that is all that is contained in Article 3. Article 4 is the Military Affairs article, and it makes appropriations to the Department of Military Affairs, which are contained on the spreadsheet that Ms. Roberts explained earlier. And then the last section of the bill, Article 3 of Article 4, Section 3, is the post-deployment health assessments from the bill that Representative Rukavina presented to the committee last week. And that concludes the presentation, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any specific questions or comments or anything that anyone wants more discussion on at this time? Oh, wait a minute. We also have Representative Holbert. I said we were going to do amendments tomorrow, and we will formally do amendments tomorrow, but Representative Holbert, with her interest in data privacy, has suggested an amendment, so we're not adopting this at this time, but we are going to give this to Mr. Shepherd to work on. And I know it's probably perfect the way it is, but just in case it isn't, he'll make sure it is perfect. So,
Madam Chair,
so Representative Holbert,
more like
speak to your amendment.
Well, this is the homework that you gave me last week to work on over break, and it's actually like a first draft kind of thing. So, certainly, any committee members that would like to provide feedback, and certainly Mr. Shepherd as well. He looks like he took a stab at some language to begin with in the bill that was included, but there's some other concepts in this language here in front of us that aren't included in what he put in the bill, so I'll defer to the committee's wishes on this issue. But
and we'll deal with this formally tomorrow, but since they had copies of it, we thought we'd get it out now. Okay. Any other? We'll do that. Any other questions or comments or suggestions? There will be some things that kind of we started dealing with too late to get into this bill, so there will be some other things that come forward. Representative Downs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this may just be something that I missed during the committee hearing, but on page 58, section 83, the personal health records system criteria, is that a bill that we heard in committee and I just missed, or is that did that come from another committee and end up here?
Would you say it again?
Page 58, section 83, is actually line 58.29. I mentioned Representative Winkler.
Yes,
yeah,
and so we did hear it.
We did.
Mm-hmm. And we'll wait. I bet Representative Winkler will be here tomorrow.
Yeah, and
so I'd rather have
some
questions on it.
Thank you.
Than me. Representative Taylor.
Madam Chair, couple pages later, page 61, section 89, the LRT mitigation impacts. I'm just wondering if I imagine this language came from you, or I've heard from a couple of other members who've had concerns about this, but impacts is a very broad term, and I'm wondering if you might be able to if this is your language or if it came from another member, if you might be able to describe what you mean by impact and how that might affect the the process and funding for the corridor.
We worked on this language in consultation with admin. I don't know. I mean, I do take responsibility for anything that's in there. I don't know. Is Commissioner Badgero, or is, I don't know if there's someone who can speak to it. Wayne Wazlowski is it.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Wayne Wazlowski. I'm the Director for Real Estate and Construction Services for the Department of Administration. In December of this year, we learned that certain issues were not addressed in the project baseline with the LRP project, and we've probably been following this with the public radio as well as the University of Minnesota and some of the other groups where that council has reached some memorandums of understanding with certain groups to include mitigation of impacts. We have not yet reached that agreement with either the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board or the Department of Administration and the Met Council. And this is not only aesthetic issues, but also issues related to the tunnel system in the campus, movement of pedestrians. Obviously, the line is going through the middle of the campus, so we're concerned about movement of pedestrians as well as vehicles. So it's issues like that to make sure they're addressed in the project design.
So I think you can see we're not making an appropriation for it. We're just...
Madam Chair, I understand that. I guess my concerns may be answered by this question, by the answer to this question, I should be more clear. Is the term mitigation of impact a term of art vis-a-vis the planning of these projects and has been used before?
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, that's correct.
Then I'll just continue the conversation offline just about the full impact here, but I understand where this is going, and I think my concerns are...
Okay, and that's the person to directly talk to if you have
exactly.
More questions.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? Can we just pass it right now? Okay, any representative?
Madam Chair, if I might, on page 63, lines 19 through 20, if you would just let me know where this language came from and who I need to speak to. It states that email addresses collected by the Secretary of State must not be provided as bulk data. If they continue to be classified as public information, and then we say they can't be distributed by bulk data, are we not just making the Secretary of State having to provide public information in probably the least effective, most expensive way possible?
Well, this is part of the Dabney bill, and I guess Beth Fraser can speak to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. Representative Holder, that line was put in because there were concerns that the entire list of emails of all of the businesses registered in the state would be considered very valuable and that people would request the whole list and use it. And so it is public data, and if somebody wants one of the emails, it seems that they could request that one, but that being able to, allowing people to request the whole list at once would perhaps be a disservice to the users.
Well, and Madam Chair, I don't think that if you want the information to remain public, I don't think you can stop an individual from making how many million requests for emails one at a time. So this prohibition of distributing them in bulk may have a really horrible adverse effect for your office if you are now going to require that somebody, because somebody will do it, to get all the email addresses. So I think there needs to be a little more thought in that process, because if in fact they are public, they are made available, and if you want to make a whole bunch of work for your office handling whatever you determine is not a bulk request of a subset of the email addresses that you hold, you could be setting yourselves up for a lot of unnecessary work.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, the goal is not to create a lot of unnecessary work, so perhaps we can talk about the best of the hearing.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? We're meeting tomorrow at 10:30 in 500 South in the State Office Building to do the final work on the bill. With the question that there will be another author's amendment, much smaller than this, but we'll deal with it then. Okay. The minutes. Representative Pappy moves the minutes of what? Whatever. Minutes in the packet. What? Okay. We didn't put them in. Sorry. That's not that. No, we're not. Scratch it. Okay. Meeting adjourned.